Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head. Attitude, bitch.
And thank you, Chris Platt, for that. Good evening, everybody. It is February 4th, 2019. Welcome to the Raw Reaction here on the ChairShot Radio Network. I am your host. My name is Harry Broadhurst. Joining me, as per usual, the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero.
What up, Ho?
And the third man, Andrew Belaz.
Woo!
So how depressing was it in Los Angeles last night, Tony?
I had a great time.
Well, you're not a fan of the foosball, so at least not a regular fan of the foosball. Your fan base out there, though, I'm guessing probably had a significantly less enjoyable experience.
Yeah, I mean, the crowd was there, so that was exciting for me. It meant for a good night. But yeah, it was a game of a slow deflation, just constantly waiting for something exciting to happen, and nothing did.
Is it just me, Andrew, or were the commercials kind of lackluster this year, too?
Yeah, the commercials kind of sucked also, so there was really nothing to save the Super Bowl itself, except halftime heat. Now that was actually entertaining. That was something.
Well, let's talk about halftime heat, shall we? Let's go ahead and get into that. For those of you who haven't had the chance to watch, I highly suggest you do so. Approximately 90,000 people over the platforms of the WWE social media networks, YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter, were watching online as it happened. In addition, they live streamed it on the WWE Network as well, which is how I watched. I was over at a friend's house watching the game, and he turned on Halftime Heat at the halftime, because at halftime the score was NXT 6, Maroon 5.
You were sitting on that the entire time, weren't you, just to use that for today, weren't you?
I was waiting for Tony to use the line that he said the next time I make a bad joke on the show.
Well, no, you know, I mean, if you're going to go ahead and go that way with NXT 6 and Maroon 5, I'm all for it, even EC 3, 2, and 1.
We'll talk about EC 1 and 2 a little bit later on in the broadcast.
It's going to be one of those nights, isn't it?
Tony, you guys were watching at the bar. Did they put the halftime heat on any of the televisions at the bar?
What do you mean they? I run the TVs there, and no, I did not.
The omnipotent they, you know, like the general manager or something like that.
That's
he is
me.
The general
I
manager,
run
actually.
My bar.
Yeah.
But you don't have an anonymous one? Bullshit.
Hornswoggle's going to start handing out orders after a while.
Well, St. Patrick's Day is coming up.
By the way, Mr. General Manager, I wouldn't mind one of those Rams glasses if you still have any.
I do, actually.
Just saying. I saw you posted something up a couple of days ago about, you know, who wants one of these. I'm like, I figured I'd talk to you at some point. So.
You're like, I actually do.
I kind of do. Like, you know, they're not my team, but I like collecting NFL kind of stuff. So I'm totally game
well,
for that one, if you've got one to spare.
I mean, if you're offering. If he's going to offer, you might as well. Anywho, did you get around to watching halftime?
My 45-minute layover in Ohio.
Be at the airport, Harry. That's all that means.
Gate 7.
Yes, clearly.
No, I think it's an hour and 45 minutes, to be honest. But I would not, in no way, shape, or form, want you to waste time going there just to see you for 5 minutes. I find no value in that.
Well, anywho, real quick there, since you weren't able to since you didn't have it on at the bar, were you able to watch it once you got off yesterday or during the course of today?
No.
Okay, well then I guess I'll talk to Andrew about this portion of the show. What was your biggest takeaway from the halftime heat, Andrew?
My biggest takeaway from it was the fact that it was actually awesome. Like, Aleister Black actually, like, looked like he cared, and he tried, and he put in some, like, extra pepper on his strikes, and they were crisper, and it's just, it was nice to not watch him just be slow and sloppy like he has been lately.
What did you think of Adam Cole hitting the Panama City Destroyer?
Or the Panama Sunrise, or whatever he likes to change it up as.
That's what it was in Ring of Honor, the Panama. I could not remember the Ring of Honor name of that move.
No problem. I got you, buddy. Don't worry. I watch more than WWE and Japanese stuff, so yeah. But, yeah, it was nice to see him pull it back out. The callbacks in the show were nice because you had the super kick moonsault spot. You had Ciampa and Gargano kind of playing up the whole will they, won't they thing, like a weird kind of love story. So I enjoyed it. There were so many little threads to pull from, and it was just, it was a 20-minute six-man tag match, and they just did so fucking much. It was nice to see.
The only thing I didn't care for was Shawn Michaels on commentary. I thought he was very disappointing. But he's never been great at doing commentary as well. Personally, I would have given that spot to Nigel.
You're not wrong, but I was
Nigel's
happy to actually hear someone call it a Shining Wizard for a change instead of just Last Shot or whatever goofy thing they like to call it.
Well, the Last Shot is what Cole calls it, but the reason I would have preferred Nigel is because Nigel has a level of familiarity from calling these guys' matches already, and you already had Vic Joseph, who was not the NXT regular announcer, on the call as well. So the commentary kind of threw me off. The match was really good, though. I definitely enjoyed it. And from what I understand, we didn't miss much during the halftime show either.
Yeah, no, I that's exactly how I heard it, too.
Tony, you watched the halftime show. How was it?
I mean, I had zero expectations, so it was Maroon 5, half of Outkast, not even the good half, and a man with two first names, Travis Scott. Yeah, it was whatever. I don't care. Like I said, this day was simply a means to make money, and I did. So I had a great time.
In addition to not watching Halftime Heat, I'm willing to bet that Tony hasn't watched World Collide yet either.
I didn't even watch Raw. What are you talking about?
He actually did miss part of the show, and we'll talk about that when we get to that portion of the review, because he's going to have to sit out a match. But
he could probably guess, and he'd be fine, to be honest. It wasn't exactly a titillating Raw tonight.
What did you think of the Worlds Collide special on Saturday night, Andrew?
It was fine. Like, I'm not going to, like, gush about it because it was not their best tournament that they've done in the last couple years, and it wasn't the best tournament I've seen in a while because, you know, I watch a bunch of other shit. But it was fine. It was fairly enjoyable. I didn't hate it. Like, nothing made me cringe or scream or cry. And most of the matches were in that, like, 3-star good kind of range or higher. So can't be too upset with it, but it was all right. Like, I didn't really see it anything to write home about.
The biggest takeaway that I had from it is that Tyler Bate, if he were to go to NXT Original, not just NXT UK, could stand on his own as a singles wrestler for sure. The match that he had with Dominik Dijak,
you.
Whatever you want to call him.
Gesundheit.
Thank
We've
you.
Over this. Have fun.
Indeed. The singles match that he had with Dijakovic, who's like 6'7" and like 270 pounds, and he made it every bit believable that he was going to pick up the win in that match, and he did with that Tyler Driver 97. My opinion, that was the best match on the show.
That one was probably only on the stream, because I don't remember seeing that on their truncated version on the network, right?
Yeah, it was on the YouTube. It was on the live YouTube. It was a quarterfinal match.
Yeah, they didn't show that one on the truncated one that I watched on the network. We only got, like, I think 5 or 6 matches, but they were mostly good. And I did like Dream and Bate, the finals. I liked Gulak and Devlin. Like, they all told decent stories. And like I said, like, nothing was terrible. Like, I didn't hate anything. But, like, they were all right. Like, it's nothing to go out of your way to watch, especially when the whole thing is 4 hours. So I can think of many better things to do with 4 hours of my life. But if you had it to spare, it wasn't too bad for wrestling.
It's very similar to, like, the old rounds of, like, the Mae Young Classic and, like, the Cruiserweight Classic, where if you have the extra time, go for it. But if you're starved for time, then make sure you just check out the finals.
More or less, yeah.
So that way you can kind of get an idea of where it's going to go. With Velveteen picking up the win, he gets to pick the champion of his choosing, and that'll play out on NXT television.
Correct, it will.
All right, I do believe that brings us to the reason why we're here for Monday Night Raw. Tonight's Raw is from Portland, Oregon, and starting the show is Stephanie McMahon to call out Becky Lynch's music, because Becky's not waiting for an introduction. Stephanie still has to get the introduction in, because even though she's supposedly a good guy now, she still enjoys cutting off ovaries. Telling Becky that Becky needs to see the doctor in order to be cleared or she will be suspended. Becky refuses, saying that she knows what's going on here and that they're doing everything they can to take her moment away. Stephanie tells Becky she's suspended. Becky whiffs by a good foot on a punch and then hits a couple of, I guess, kind of hits them. Like, they kind of connected and they kind of didn't. Does that make sense, Andrew?
It does. It does. But there's also
reasons. They look
reason
bad. She's not going to want to tag.
In the way. They weren't clean. Stephanie had her knees and leg in the way, and she was trying to kick her off the whole time, so there was no real open. Now, did that make the situation look awkward? Yes. But then again, it also made it look more like an actual fight, because how many times do you turn someone around and they just let you punch them, and then you can get full mount and just start raining down, elbows or fists? Like, that doesn't happen. So it looked more like a believable fight, like, Becky snapped and Stephanie wasn't expecting it. But it did look awkward, I'll give you that.
Stephanie kicks Becky in the bad knee to escape in order to be able to get out of the ring. Eventually, Becky is arrested. She's escorted off of the premises, but gets into a confrontation with Ronda Rousey backstage before she leaves. The confrontation comes up next. Tony, what did you think of the opening segment?
I have no idea why Stephanie McMahon is involved here. I'm not, like, bothered by it. It's unnecessary. What they're doing is either A, allowing Becky to rest because she really is injured, even if it's just a little bit, or B, trying to add intrigue into a match that may or may not happen. C is the likely answer, which is both. They want to create intrigue and blah, blah, blah. But reality is, this match is already sold. All you do is let them keep talking shit to each other and stay away from each other. So the segment itself wasn't bad, but it also wasn't necessary. And I also don't see the man, the character, wanting to attack Stephanie. I get that she would not want to see a doctor. I get that she wants to live out this, what she claims she's earned. But it doesn't make sense, because the man isn't stupid. It's not an uneducated person. It's not someone who doesn't make sense. She has made sense every single segment, every single moment that she's had. She has done things that make sense. This doesn't make sense. You don't attack Stephanie McMahon, not because you're afraid, not because it's ballsy. You just don't do it. It doesn't add anything to the match. Not even her saying, oh, you're going to suspend me, blah, 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 I'm going to beat you up. Even that doesn't make sense from the perspective of the Becky Lynch character. So it didn't work for me. It was just a way to get her off TV for a little bit, which would I assume be because she needs to rest a little before WrestleMania. But it just comes down to this lack of, creativity. You go to the well with what you always do, and you interject Stephanie McMahon into a women's match where she has really no business being. And it comes off as lazy. I don't care. And then you move to the backstage segment where Ronda Rousey. Now, look, Ronda Rousey has acted in a couple of films. And when you're in a movie and you have the soundtrack to back you up and you talk the way that she did tonight, you're thinking to yourself, man, she's pretty good. But when you're watching wrestling, this comes off as a heavily rehearsed script. It's not authentic. You know what I mean? Her diatribe was a little too long and a little bit too, like, just the points were made at a particular aspect of the promo, and it just came off as someone trying to act. So the whole, and I did watch, I was unable to recap it because I was on the road, but I did watch / listen to it, and I don't know, it just came off as like, yeah, there's a lot of intensity and I totally believe in you, but there's a difference between reading a script for a film and being real on a wrestling show, and I think Ronda doesn't always find the balance.
I think the issue is that they come off kind of robotic, almost the same complaint that we used to have about Charlotte's promos, and Charlotte's still just as guilty of this as Ronda is, although Charlotte should have the pro wrestling experience to not do it on such a regular basis. Ronda, you can kind of tell that there's a lot of nerves involved there, so it probably is overly rehearsed, so that's why it comes off as robotic as it does. Andrew, your thoughts on the opening segment as well as the Becky-Ronda confrontation backstage?
Yeah, I'm going to actually disagree with Tony on the opening segment. And here's the point that I saw it from. And Tony being the writer, he can clap back with, you know, an assessment of how I saw it. But yes, the man is a logical, kind of very driven persona. But what's the one thing that we know put a wrench in the works recently? Besides Charlotte Flair, it was doctors. Yes. And you could see the fact that as soon as Stephanie said it, her persona changed. The look on her face, she actually looked scared. She looked like she was about to cry at some point in that promo. And she just said, don't say it. Say it again, I'm going to hit you. And then when Stephanie came back with, well, you know, and then she's just like, well, you don't have to. And it's like, it's the one thing that she's defensive about. And it's perfect because it's one of those intangible fears that people have. Some people have a fear of dying alone or being buried alive, and some people are just scared of snakes or spiders or water or some shit like that. This one is the man is not afraid of any man, woman, anything you throw at her, but the one thing she can't control is a doctor's opinion on keeping her in or out of the fight, when she proved that with one leg or not, she still won the Royal Rumble. So it shows a chink in the armor, so to speak, and she even broke down a little bit in the promo. And I thought it was beautiful character work, because she was using, you know, her typical brash, cocky kind of persona, throwing out the words. And then as soon as the doctor thing came up, she got really defensive, kind of pensive. And it's just like, no, you don't have to. Nope. Just don't do it. And that's exactly what happens when somebody is scared of the reality of a situation and they can't control it. Tony, any response?
Well, that makes sense. And it may very well be the fact that I couldn't actually visually watch it, you know, due to me driving. But yeah, no, I totally get that.
Okay, that's a fair response. Now, when it comes to the Ronda thing, I agree with both of you that it came off robotic, but it wasn't necessarily for the delivery. It was more for the words she said. Because as I was listening
definitely.
To this, aside from the ice up and Advil or whatever the hell she says, like, it seemed too eloquent. Like, there's words flying out of her mouth that I'm like, she had to read those twice to pronounce them. Like, she's been on ESPN saying, I think, what, she didn't graduate high school, and, you know, she was doing judo stuff from, like, ninth grade up or something like that. There is no way that she speaks like that without acting, training, being taught the script, essentially. So stop making her talk out of her realm. Like, yes, Samoa Joe is supposed to talk that way. Paul Heyman's supposed to talk that way. Ronda Rousey, not so much. Like, you want to make her lovable and smiley and all this other stuff for people to kind of get behind her, because she's supposed to be a relatable underdog story in general and like a trailblazer, and then you have her talk like that? Yeah, no, there's that. That's where the disconnect in writing the character came from for me.
Well, I think that there's not so much on that whole lovable character thing anymore either, because she kind of addresses it post-match here. And Tony, since you were busy during the portion of this, I will excuse you from the discussion unless you want to chime in with just general thoughts here, but it was Ronda Rousey versus Liv Morgan first, and she taps out Liv Morgan in a minute and 26 seconds with that rolling armbar. And then she says that people in the arena are booing her and that there's nothing she can do about it because it's not like she's doing anything different than what she's done the entire time she's been there. So she wants someone to step up and do something to stop her from doing what she's doing, calling out Sarah Logan specifically. That match happens mostly during a commercial break. When we come back, Ronda taps her out with the armbar as well at about 4.5 minutes. I think 4:50 is the official time that Thomas Hall has listed here. But with that right there going back to back, it looks like Ruby Riott's about to step into the ring as well, but Ruby ends up backing out, maybe saving that match for Elimination Chamber perhaps. Andrew, how do you think the Ronda Rousey character got spun in the ring tonight as compared to the backstage segment that we were just critiquing for her mic work in regards to the verbiage that was used?
Made no sense. Like, if you're pissed off about a situation, if somebody's basically out babyfacing you in the angle because people like them more than you do, or more than you, so you're the heel by default, you don't suddenly change your vernacular. Like, you don't suddenly become just like this beacon of erudite discussion because you're mad. Does anybody really get more eloquent when they're angry? No, it's the opposite. When you're angry, you want your fist to do the talking, much like she did in the ring. And it's such a disconnect from as soon as she walked out, she was being all smug and shit to Becky, and then as soon as she gets in the ring, then it's kind of like, oh, now I want to fight all of you because I'm just angry and I get no respect, and Rodney Dangerfield showed up, and it's like, what the fuck? Like, they don't know what they're doing with Becky. I hope that she takes a break after Mania, because this is, it's hard to watch, because it's just, it's a pile of shit. It's a mess.
The biggest issue that I had is she came out all happy-go-lucky, smiley babyface on her way down to the ring before the Liv Morgan match, too. You just got into the supposed heated confrontation with Becky backstage. Don't you think you would still be pissed off from that?
Yeah. That's a lot of disconnect and things. Like, I kind of check out from Ronda because her character makes no sense. And they even pointed out in not only announcing but storytelling when it's like, oh, you don't want her to get angry face on because that's a different Ronda. Like, really? Like, okay, so Ronda has figured out the Dragon Ball Z way of Kaioken or going Super Saiyan, and that's when we can just tell. When she scowls, now it's serious business. Great. That's wonderful storytelling. Mm-hmm.
You weren't able to watch either of the matches, so I want to ask you specifically about the matches here. Tony, do you have any interest in Ronda Rousey and Ruby Riott for the Raw Women's title, possibly at Elimination Chamber?
I mean, sure. You know, we need something between now and then. So, sure, why not? I didn't really. I mean, there wasn't much of a match to watch, so I didn't miss much. Again, Ronda on the microphone, like, you know, come in here and skin me like one of your rabbits or whatever she said to Sarah Logan. Also, the reality that you beat a team that's supposed to be facing, that's supposed to be good enough to possibly win the WWE Women's Tag Team Championship titles, which obviously don't mean anything. Also, it just like, what are you, Ronda? I'm not saying you have to affiliate to being a face or a heel. What I'm saying is we need a little bit of consistency or a for sure direction. And I don't think they know. That's probably another reason why they're taking Becky off the TV. Because no matter what, Becky is the face here. That's what we want. That's what the crowd wants. And, you know, they're going to go with this plucky underdog and who's like relatively new to the game, but respects it and loves everyone involved. And it's not her fault. She's good. You know, Ronda Rousey. And I've spoken before about Ronda and I like her. I think that she has done amazing as far as a first timer in the ring and really, really good. But you can't deny the reality of wrestling fandom. You can't deny that no matter how good you are, unless you're Kurt freaking Angle, there's going to be a lot of backlash. There's going to be a lot of hesitancy from fans, and you should relish in that. You should take that and use it. But they keep denying it, and they keep shoving it back in our faces, and it comes off like it came off tonight, where no one really wants to boo Becky. No one really wants to cheer Ronda.
Our next contest is a four-way for the number one contendership to the tag team titles at a point to be determined here. We end up seeing the Revival once again end up as number one contenders to the tag team titles. Dash Wilder picks up the pinfall on Bo Dallas with the Shatter Machine at 11 minutes and 59 seconds, about eight of which was shown. The match also involved Heavy Machinery and the Lucha Dragons, or the Lucha House Party, excuse me. I'm having a flashback to a couple of years ago when the Lucha Dragons were still a thing and still relevant. Andrew, with Heavy Machinery being in both the four-way elimination match on SmackDown for their number one contenders tags and the four-way match here on Raw, with the way they were portrayed in both of those matches as kind of a more serious team over on SmackDown and kind of the laughing, goofy, joking around tag team here, which side of the booking perspective do you end up seeing them falling up on the main roster? Do you see them staying on Raw and being kind of like that Bushwhackers 2.0 that we kind of saw a little bit tonight? Or do you see them being treated as more of a threat of team on SmackDown that beat the New Day?
See, this is an interesting question. I'll give you points on that one, Harry, because both tag divisions are awful. And they both have teams that aren't being used. Like, you know, Killian Dane is going on record talking about, you know, sanity being left out of things. The Good Brothers are randomly getting a match tomorrow because reasons. And it's hard in a sense because you don't know who's kind of on the back burner. You don't know who they're bringing up again. What I'd rather the team be taken seriously and Otis to just be seen a little goofy, kind of like they were in NXT, where they weren't a super serious team and Tucker wasn't like the balls to the wall straight man. He was a little goofy within himself, but Otis was over the top. That's fine. And the way they portray him on SmackDown is better because it allows Otis to be funny and Tucker to kind of be the apologetic, he's a little special, it's fine kind of person. And that's good. And it's better. But knowing Vince, and Vince likes frat boy sophomoric humor, he probably got a kick out of, you know, Otis pretending he was like Cornholio or whatever the hell it was during the Moment of Bliss and just repeating Pretty Lady and gyrating and making weird noises. They'll probably end up on Raw as a joke team because it's not like we don't have Hawkins and Ryder for that or Slater and Rhino, I guess. They still count. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't even know who the hell is or that. Well, but they're just lovable goofy. I don't know. Divisions suck. So
The problem with lovable goofy is that's basically the category that they're trying to shoehorn Heavy Machinery in on Raw, whereas they were treated as a legitimate threat last week on SmackDown when they pinned Big E to knock the New Day out of the four-way tag team elimination match for the number one contendership that the Usos won. Tony, same question. Where do you think we'll end up seeing Heavy Machinery, Raw or SmackDown? Did we lose Tony? I think we lost Tony. Hold on.
No, let me check. I'm here. You found me. It's okay. Everyone's all right. I don't know.
You just slipped into a coma talking about tag team wrestling.
Yeah, sorry. You knocked me out with that one. I don't know which show they're going to, and unfortunately, I don't care. I'm also curious as to how this brand new team to Raw or SmackDown gets possible title opportunities. It's crazy. Also, they came up short. So it's just a lot of like, what are you doing? Why did you bring these people up? I didn't watch them in NXT, so I didn't know what to expect. But looking at them and hearing commentary, they're another joke team in a long line of joke teams. And I don't mean that they as a team are a joke. I mean that they are not to be taken seriously. When you look at the match tonight, who in there are we supposed to take seriously? Like, what team are we supposed to look at and say, yep, they're going to win? The one team that we're supposed to is the Revival, which is the one team that won. But they've done so much damage over the past few months that we're just like, oh, okay, I guess. There's nothing, there was no intrigue. I don't want to see the B team. Lucha House Party, I mean, look, man, I'm Mexican, and there's no pride there. I don't care. And, you know, the most annoying noisemaker in all of the world outside of an air horn at a wrestling event with only 20 people is that stupid piece of shit thing that Kalisto had. I hate those. And, of course, this is a personal bias. But, like, what are you trying to do here? What is this thing? what image are you trying to give? That people who wear masks have a lot of fun? Like, why do we care? Why should we care outside of the flips, you know? I don't know. It's just there's no one team that we're supposed to root for, and the Revival is that one team, and the crowd doesn't root for them. They don't care. They also don't know what they are. Are they heel? Are they face? Should we care? Should we not? You know, the worm is now the caterpillar. Up is down. Left is right. I don't know, man.
Speaking of Hawkins and Ryder, backstage segment with them here that I actually really enjoyed because you got to see almost a more serious side of Zack Ryder and Curt Hawkins here. And I say that obviously with a caveat of this being a team with the perennial loser gimmick going on right now. Hawkins has lost like 250 straight. Ryder even points out the fact that they misspelled his name on his match Chiron last week, which I didn't even catch, which tells you how little attention I pay to Zack Ryder these days. But the way that they actually had this conversation, it made it seem like they're setting them up for more here. Tony hates fantasy booking. We've talked about this all the time here. But in my head, as I'm watching this segment, I'm seeing a scenario where Hawkins and Ryder break Hawkins' win streak, his all the losses that he has, by winning the tag team titles on the pre-show at WrestleMania.
Okay.
Tony?
Was
What's
there
the question?
A question in there somewhere?
Where do you go with Hawkins and Ryder?
Oh, this just feels like a really weird time to start this team up. Are they going for a multi-man tag match at WrestleMania? Enjoy the intrigue. I enjoy it mainly because it's real. However, you don't want to force it, and tonight seemed a little bit forced, especially that joke at the end. I don't even know how to spell my name half the time. You were just complaining about them spelling it wrong. That's not funny. Come on. Who wrote that? Was that Ryder? Did you do that? Better than that.
Yeah, you did that.
Idiots.
Ryder tripped over his own promo. That's why he had to try to save it, because I think he said they spelled my name Z-A-C-H-K. And he goes, no, he spelled it with a H, and my name's spelled Z-A-C-K, and they spelled it Z-A-C-H. So he fucked up his own line, then he tried to save it with
really
a really
did.
Dumb joke.
Yeah, well, but no, in them too, with the history and him and the losing streak and all that, it's a storyline that writes itself. So that's cool. I'm all for it, you know? It's just a really weird time to be doing it. And like I said, there's no other teams that you really care about. You don't even really care about the champions.
For a second there, I forgot that Roode and Gable were the champions because they weren't even on Raw tonight. Andrew, where do you fall on this Hawkins-Ryder pairing? Are you cool with it? Do you think it'll mean anything, or is it just something there that's in order to kill time?
I mean, as much as we like to dog on WWE for not keeping continuity or having plans in, you know, mind long run, this is obviously one of those seeds that are planted now for something down the line. Now, could it be something as stupid as, you know, one of them wins the Andre the Giant Battle Royal and to break a losing streak? Sure. Could it be as dumb as kind of what the fucking B-Team did where, you know, they get – or not B-Team. What Titus Worldwide did against the Bar last year where they got a couple fluky kind of random wins against the tag team champions, and then when the title match happens, they lose, but it broke the losing streak. So – I guess, and it gives them something to do. There's a nostalgia pop to a degree because people still like Ryder, especially because of his YouTube show with the toys and everything. And, you know, people like Chelsea Green, and everybody knows about that whole thing going together. So it's fine. Is it going to go anywhere really crazy? Are they going to be like a iconic tag team and, you know, be like multiple time champions? Doubtful. But, you know, we'll see something in the next couple of weeks. The iconic champions, Ryder and Hawkins, yeah.
I was going to say, I think they're on SmackDown. I missed a backstage segment that I figured Tony would want to talk about. Bayley and Sasha Banks are about to be interviewed. And apparently the interview ladies decided to just be dicks all night and ask really mean questions. I don't know if you guys noticed that as well. But they ask a question there that Sasha takes offense to, though these days what doesn't Sasha take offense to? And they're interrupted by Alicia Fox and Nikki Cross, and I admit, and I feel ashamed to admit this, Alicia's "don't cross the Fox line" at the end of the promo got me. I popped. Let's go ahead and segue that right into the match itself, where the winners qualify for the Elimination Chamber match for the women's tag team titles. It is Bayley and Sasha against Alicia and Nikki, kind of-ish, sort of. Sasha puts in her best performance in this calendar year in the WWE as she just lays it ringside for the entirety of the contest, other than pulling Bayley out of the way. Bayley picks up the win for the team. Bayley and Sasha advance to the Elimination Chamber when Bayley pins, I think she pinned Alicia Fox with a roll-up. And that moves Bayley and Sasha as the fifth of six teams to qualify for the Elimination Chamber match, not this Sunday, but the following Sunday. Tony, go ahead and talk about how great Sasha was in this match.
She was so amazing. No, man, I wish she was better at promos, because all she has is one mode, and that's angry bitch from the hood. And as entertaining as that may be from time to time, it just is, it's like, all right, why? Chill. The match, she didn't even wrestle. So I guess the story here is that Bayley is strong enough for the two of them. We knew they were advancing. We knew that Nikki and Alicia were hopefully a one-time thing. Still not a fan of Alicia. Still find her completely annoying and useless. Nikki, sorry, you're not annoying me, but so far proven to be relatively useless as well. It's just weird. Everybody that has these debuts, I mean, it's another one of those times where why would you bring them up? Like, what do you have for them? You know, another person that we saw tonight probably should have gotten a bigger pop than they did for winning, and yet didn't, which continues the questioning of whether or not the right time was now to bring certain people up to the main roster.
Andrew, your thoughts on the basically handicap match to qualify for the women's tag team title Elimination Chamber?
Hey, just because you've compared Bayley to Eugene in the past doesn't mean you get to call her handicapped. That's rude, man. Come on, we're better than that. Fuck.
No, we're not.
Fair point, you win. True. Anyway, Sasha did the one thing that kind of helps Bayley get an advantage at the end. So, yeah, Sasha did something. She's helping. But, yeah, what are you going to do? Like, I think Tony hits the nail on the head with the whole timing situation, because they're building towards WrestleMania. The matches have to feel larger than life, and you're not going to put new people in there that the crowd isn't invested in, that won't just draw eyes because of name recognition. So it's weird. It's like introducing new characters at the end of a book, just because they're going to be relevant in the next book in the series, but you're not going to get that for a while. So just kind of chew on this, get confused, try to figure out who they are from like the couple limited chapters you have, and then we'll fill in the blanks in a year or two or three, or depend if you're George R. R. Martin, six, you know, when you finally get the next book out or something like that. So, yeah, WWE writing at its finest. But I do have to admit, Fox and Cross make a lot of sense, because they're both two different flavors of crazy. And I like the fact that Nikki was just validated with, she doesn't judge me for being crazy and wanting to play, because, you know, she accepts who I am. And everybody else kind of looks at her like the weird girl. So in a weird, twisted way, it's almost a relatable kind of pairing, that they're both weird, so they get together, like Breakfast Club kind of stuff. But what you going to do?
We're going to combine the segment before the match with the main event, because they tie together here. Kurt Angle comes out and appears to be about to announce his retirement based on the way the promo was going. He is interrupted by Baron Corbin, because those are words that every wrestling fan loves to hear. Interruption by Baron Corbin. Corbin calls out Angle, so Angle threatens to break Corbin's ankle. That brings out Drew McIntyre, and an attempted two-on-one beating does not happen or is thwarted due to the assistance of Braun Strowman. That leads to the Teddy Long special. That's right, it's a tag match, playa. Your main event is Drew McIntyre and Baron Corbin taking on the team of Kurt Angle and Braun Strowman. They go, let me get down to the bottom of the review so I can get the exact match time here. 12 minutes and 14 seconds, and Braun Strowman is disqualified for illegally entering the ring to beat up Baron Corbin. When the fuck does that decision ever happen? Anyways.
That was the thought that went through my mind, too.
Post-match, we see Strowman get a little bit of revenge for the ring-step-assisted attack on him before the Royal Rumble as he slams both McIntyre and Corbin on the steps and Angle and Strowman stand tall. I got to be honest with you guys. I actually thought that Strowman was going to turn on Angle tonight and realign with his buddies and set up Angle's redemption storyline as a match against Strowman, possibly at Mania. What did you think of, first of all, what did you think of Kurt Angle's mic work, Andrew?
It was fine. Like, you know, he referenced a bunch of nostalgia pop moments with the milk and all that other stuff, and he had to get in the broken friggin' neck. So it was good. And if it was a retirement speech, that's fine, because now you kind of, everybody sits there going, are they really going to milk this just for another WrestleMania match? Like, really? Like, is this where we're going with this? But I don't know. Like, it was a thing. I'm over Braun. I've been over Braun before other people were over Braun. Like, he bores the shit out of me. He has, like, two things he does. Runs people over and screams. So, yay. That's depth. Now he's a babyface. Sure. Because he came off of injury, and I guess you have to be compassionate or sympathetic to a monster who hates people and who, you know, just throws people around and was, you know, berating and flipping different vehicles and going after Kurt Angle last year when Angle was GM. But let's forget about that, because now he respects him, and now it's all water under the bridge, and, you know, you got a friend in me kind of stuff. So Braun's been playing Kingdom Hearts, and he's stuck on that Toy Story level like a lot of people are. So good for him. You know, Woody and Buzz forever. Fucking
you
garbage.
Got a friend in me. Tony, your thoughts on Kurt Angle's promo?
Well, I thought that the Toy Story level wasn't as difficult as people really portrayed it to be. I got through it relatively easily.
Of course, Tony wants to discuss Kingdom Hearts 3.
Don't discuss it too much, because you know people are going to bitch about spoilers. So just reel it back to Angle and Strowman and that.
Woody and Buzz are toys. That come to
okay.
life.
You bastard.
Leave.
How dare you?
No.
No, you know. What are we talking about? Oh, Angle. I think I talked about it last week that they're doing the, you know, I'm going to retire, but I have one more match in me thing for WrestleMania. I mean, we knew it was coming. I knew it was coming. And, you know, I'm not like going to pull a Watchery and tell you to read it on another website. It's not something that's so magically predictable that I'm just a fucking genius. It's there.
But is it magically delicious?
Not even a little bit. As proved by the match.
If it's Watchery related, no.
I know the name and I know the disdain, but I don't quite know the reference. So have fun with that one.
Go check out Tony's other employer, 411mania.com.
He's just like the worst writer on the site ever. And although I believe that a majority of it has like troll tendencies, which for whatever reason, 411 Mania really, really enjoys having at least one. There just seems to be so much truth to his persona that it's like almost believable that he's this asinine. Think Baron Corbin as a writer. So he just ruins shit. Anyways,
he needed the money.
Okay, I get it. Thanks, Braun.
Braun being respectful to Angle is just, it's not like, it doesn't anger me. It just makes me roll my eyes. You know, if there are levels of annoyance in watching Raw, you know, on a scale of like eye roll to shoe thrown at TV, this is just an eye roll. But it's still a problem. It's like, come on, guys. Come on. A little thing, I want to backtrack real quick. So Angle walks down, you know, the hallway and meets people that respect him and love him. And Apollo Crews says audibly, you ever need anything, man, I got your back. Claps hands. I don't know what you're going to say out there, but I got you. And then Angle, like, is about to get attacked, and Apollo is nowhere. He's nowhere. I'm not saying he has to be. I'm just saying, how do you do that? As a writer of a show, how do you make such a huge flaw in such a small amount of time? Apollo's like, oh, I didn't mean, like, physically get your back. I meant, like, you need me to pick up your kids one day, or, you know, like, what the fuck?
And it's funny, Rizar scared the shit out of him, so he didn't want to leave, because Rizar was just staring him down the entire time. That's exactly how that was. So that's going to be next week's match. It's going to be Drew McIntyre and Rizar against Apollo Crews and Kurt Angle. That's next week's match. You didn't know that?
I see. All right. I did it. Wow. Crazy. They really are good. Mm-hmm. They're one step ahead of me. Amazing. Mm-hmm. So we get to the idea of the match itself. Look, I remember a couple of weeks ago, Triple H, Stephanie, Shane, and Vince showed up on Raw and said that things were changing, that they knew exactly what the issue was, that they understood, and that they were going to shake things up. I have not been shooken once since they've said that. In fact, they gave us maybe a week or two of, you know, relatively good TV by comparison. And then they said, all right, we fooled them. Let's go back to Baron Corbin, because that's what we want. It's not even that – I mean, nothing has changed. Nothing. Nothing has altered, aside from the fact that he's not the GM. Like, that's it. And I'm so worried that this is going to lead to Angle versus Baron Corbin, and I just don't want to see that. That's not the redemption story that I care for, because guess what? Angle got his redemption story when he came back from his elongated vacation and faces were surrounding Baron Corbin and they all hit their finishers on him. That was it. You ruined it then. You can't stretch this out. So I don't know who he's going to face. And if he faces Drew, what do you do there? You let Drew beat him and then Angle cries away like a puppy again? If he faces Corbin, Angle wins, but who cares? It's not even booking yourself into a corner. It's creating lackluster characters and then not giving up on what we realize doesn't work. Baron Corbin doesn't work, and I mean that on many levels. He doesn't work in the ring. He doesn't work as a character. He doesn't work at all. Like, I mean, as a person, I don't know the guy. He could be great. He could be super passionate about wrestling. Certain things I've read and certain things I've heard make me feel like he isn't, but that's my own personal, observations. With regards to the in-ring product, he's about as useful and as amazing as Nia Jax. And just to be clear, that means not at all.
I tolerate Baron a little bit more than I tolerate Nia. Not much, but a little bit. All right, let's get back into it here. Hold on. My site refreshed, so I need a quick second. Okay. Jeff Jarrett and Elias is a thing that happened on tonight's episode of Raw. I actually enjoyed the match. The old school Southern style that Jarrett works just connects with me for some reason. I'm not sure what it is, but I actually enjoyed the match. I thought the pre-match mic work by Road Dogg was cliche and a bit past its expiration date. But there's something about seeing Jarrett having the time of his life getting to be back on television and then doing the right thing by doing a clean in the center for the young up-and-coming talent, which not enough of the legends do when they're on television anymore these days. I had no issues with this match. Tony, what did you think of Elias and Jeff Jarrett?
Earlier this week, Jeff Jarrett claimed that Elias really, really needs that big feud to make him a star. I don't know if he meant him, but I'm here to tell him that you are not the feud that Elias needs. This is a one-off thing that was cool, you know, it's not ultimately bad. Realistically, the worst part of this entire segment was Road Dogg. I just don't know what you were doing. I get the nostalgia, I get why you were there, but so few people in the crowd know why you're there. Honestly, I don't know the entire crowd, but I can venture to say that a majority of said crowd had no idea why he was there, especially when you do the shtick that you do that had nothing to do with Jeff Jarrett. You don't go out there and say the Road Dogg Jesse James and then cut off Billy Gunn as if he just never existed simply because he's elsewhere. I'm not saying it's a disservice to Billy Gunn. I'm saying you're mixing, like, eras of your own career, and it just comes off weird. And then you got that after the match thing where, so, okay, Elias gets the win. That's great. But you still got Road Dogg, of all people, you know, hitting his juke and jive and then pausing just to say, suck it. Now, I'm not the type of person to get mad at, you know, legends, quote unquote, doing their thing, even if it's at the expense of one of our current superstars. However, I venture to, I just wonder, like, what here was gained for Elias? If that is the ultimate goal here, what was gained? A win over JJ? Like, as if we didn't know that was going to happen? Or see, that's what's expected, Barry. That's what we expect. What we don't expect is Elias to get his ass handed to him immediately after the match. For what? From who? Road Dogg? The pudgy guy? The one that looks like, you know, an uncle who used to own a Munster truck? I don't... It just...
Did we lose Harry now? Everybody's falling off. Sheesh.
Andrew, your thoughts on the Jeff Jarrett Elias
there we
match?
Go. I didn't hate it. Like, you know, it was nice. I agree with Tony's point that Road Dogg mixing personas and eras and just, it was awkward. Like, it wasn't bad. There was still flow to his cadence and his promo, and it was fine. It was a Road Dogg promo. It was a BG James promo from, you know, TNA, be it the James Gang or Three Live Crew or something like that. Like, it was that same typical thing we've grown to expect from him. The era mixing was weird. The fact that he also said D-Generation X when this wasn't a D-Generation X thing at all, that was just unnecessary. But, you know, Elias cutting him off, it was good. Singing Be With My Baby Tonight, and then Corey kind of giving Renee a hard time through it was probably the most enjoyable commentary they had the entire night. It was just amusing. It was a good spot. I don't think anybody watching or in the crowd hated that moment because it was just supposed to be fun. The match was very serviceable for TV. Jarrett proved he can still go. He's in better shape than he's been in a while, so that helps. And, you know, you got to see the juke and jive, and then come on, it's wrestling. Everybody does the wait, and then for some reason your opponent always stops and listens. Like, okay, why am I waiting? And then the suck it in the chair shot. I mean, the guitar shot. That's fine. Like, it's good. I don't think this is the promo or the feud or anything that's going to, like, you know, put the rocket on Elias or make him the biggest star since God knows what. But it's fine. It works to get to WrestleMania, because What could this turn into? It could just turn into this really awkward kind of dueling kind of like guitar shot song, weird minstrel kind of battle, if you want to call it that. And then maybe Elias needs to get a tag partner. Maybe we get a legend. So then it's Road Dogg, you know, it's Jarrett and the Roadie against Elias and his Roadie. Maybe the Roadie could be Rock for a big pop, and then a big concert or something like that. Who really knows? I don't know. It's WWE. It's a very, very WWE kind of setup. So I don't hate it. It's enjoyable still. I'm fine with it.
I think I'm a bigger Jeff Jarrett fan than most, and that's one of the reasons that I'm kind of okay with this year. Plus, like I said when I first started discussing this year, the fact that Jarrett laid down clean in the center with the drift away made it okay, much more palatable to me than some of the other Legends appearances we've seen where they actually go over the next generation talent that they're supposed to be helping take to that next level. I will say that I agree with Tony that this will not be the program to get Elias to the next level, and there's no doubt in my mind that Jarrett even thinks that he's going to be the guy that will get Elias to that next level. With that being said, Elias getting an opportunity to work with people from the previous generation that has more name recognition will help up his status a little, even in the smallest amounts, to the current generation that maybe is more familiar with the era that Jeff Jarrett came up in with the early 90s and then once again coming back in the Attitude Era. Dana Brooke and Natalya backstage. Dana tries to apologize. Natty appears to ignore. Dana gets mad, yells. Natty had headphones in. Andrew, it's gonna pain you to admit these words, but here they come. You ready?
Shoot.
Lio Rush had a damn fine match tonight.
Was it though? Like, what's your definition of damn fine? Like, wow, Bobby Lashley beat up an already injured guy, and it was all right with him kind of running around and just playing, I'm faster than you because your ribs are taped up and I'm going to kick you in the ribs. Like, character work-wise, it was all right. Heel work-wise, it was fine. But as a wrestling match, what was really done?
I thought it was a good match. I enjoyed it.
Because I can tell you one thing that pissed me off.
Go ahead.
One lapse in psychology, one lapse in logic, the abdominal stretch. He did it on the side without tape. What kind of moron are you? He's got giant black tape. Huh?
Yeah, that was hardly an abdominal stretch. That was a...
You know what I mean. He tried it.
Before the gym. That was yoga.
You know the spot. You know it's supposed to be an abdominal stretch. And he did it on the wrong side. There's a gigantic target. It was giant black tape. You can't miss it. You kicked him there 3 or 4 times. Now I'm going to stretch the other side. And then Finn turns it around and uses the bad side to stretch him back and really wrench. And then he decides to sell the ribs later for like a half a second and then come back with the sling blade. Like, there was no psychology in that match. There was some okay heel work, but it was just, it was more spectacle of seeing Lio Rush in the ring trying to be somewhat competitive and Finn Balor getting to be the big guy. But it was there. It wasn't awful. Like, it wasn't the worst thing I saw all night, but damn fine is quite an overstatement, buddy.
I enjoyed it. Tony?
Sorry, buddy. You're going to stand alone on this one. I'm not against it. I mean, he did a cool little bounce off the ropes into a stunner that the cameraman missed. And outside of that, there wasn't anything of value here. Finn Balor, the wrestler, should not be wrestling Lio to prove a point to Lashley. Realistically, there's no reason for him to do so. I mean, I get it. You know, he's a gung-ho face who will rise to any challenge. But at the same time, you're booked for an IC title match, which I don't know who changes these things now. I don't know who the boss is. Not that I want one. Don't take that as me wanting a boss. I just don't know that Lashley has the power to do so. So it just like, okay. Again, what this is they're doing this stop-start thing where they have an idea for a match. They have to get to that point. How do they do that without being repetitive or boring or uncreative? And because they're the WWE, they don't ask themselves those questions. They simply do what they always do. You know, let's have them fight the lackey. Let's have them face the manager. Let's do a swerve and, you know, say he's out there for the IC title, but we're gonna do something else, you know? And it's like, the entirety of this show tonight was very, very bleh. It was the Super Bowl of Monday Night Raw.
Andrew, real quick, Andrew, I know you haven't been around for very long on this show here. That is about the most quickness that Tony has ever come with a caveat for one of his statements in this show's history. Not that I'm saying I want one.
Seem pretty quick for Tony's laid-back style, yeah. Tony, who's writing your character? There's some inconsistency there.
I don't want to put it in the universe that I need a general manager of any sort.
What if
Paige
it was an anonymous one and he just sent an email?
Especially an anonymous one. I do not want Cole on my screen.
Yeah. Yeah, that depends. If Michael Cole's reading the emails again, fuck out of here. Paige comes out to promote her movie. Are you guys planning on seeing it, Tony? Yes? No?
Yeah, I'm a little intrigued by it, mainly because I want to see how well Zelina does as AJ,
It all comes back.
I knew you were gonna say that.
Same here. I teed him up for that one, and I had no hesitation in doing so. Andrew, how about you? What do you think? Do you have any interest in seeing Fighting With My Family?
Not at all.
You know, I really like Steven Merchant. Not like, you know, like love him, but he's from The Office. He does stuff. So I kind of enjoy his work, and that makes me feel okay. It's a movie about wrestling. I tend to gravitate towards those just because it's a movie about wrestling, not to be confused with a movie with wrestlers in it. I don't watch WWE produced films like See No Evil or The Marine 342.
Hey, Marine 5 and 6 were actually pretty good.
I never got that far.
I bought 5 out of sheer just goofiness, because me and a few buddies were hanging out. I'm like, you know, fuck it. This could be awful, because I saw the first two with Cena and DiBiase Jr. They were crap. And then, you know, 3 and 4 I didn't catch because it was Miz. And I'm like, how believable is that? Then I'm like, okay, fuck it. 5, they're promoting. I'll buy it. It's not that bad. And I watched it with my buddies, and we kind of all sat there and we're just like, this isn't bad. Miz is a believable kind of badass. If we didn't know it was the Miz, this isn't bad. Doesn't suck. And then 6 we did for the same reasons, because now it kind of became tradition, and then we're just like, this is not quite as good as 5, but still not bad. Like, wow, fucking A.
Really?
Yeah, bro.
really
what's the one with, what is it, it's like something rounds, is it 12 rounds, 5 rounds?
12
rounds?
Rounds, yeah.
12
rounds. One that had Randy Orton in, I think, the second one.
I'll go to the papers if I have to. I'll never forget that.
No, that was, fuck, which one was that? I remember Unstoppable, Unbreakable, something like that. Fuck if I remember. I've never seen any of the WWE-produced films. Tony, this
you know what,
you.
Though?
Aw, Puddin'.
Let's be honest here, though. Is that I'm pretty sure none of you have seen it, and if you have, good for you, because you watch Sci-Fi Channel at weird times like I do, too. I think it's called The Other Side of Town or The Wrong Side of Town. I forget which one it is. But it's
wrong
one of Batista's
of town,
first...
Batista and RVD.
Oh, you have seen it. So, it's one of Batista's first acting jobs in RVD. It's weird for me to say these words, but the movie is awful, and it's not RVD or Batista's fault. They actually do an okay job acting their roles in the movie. It's literally the way it's shot and the supporting cast, and literally everything in the movie is the worst drizzling shit pile of crap I've ever fucking seen.
Yeah, isn't Stormy Daniels in that movie?
She should be. It would have been slightly better.
I think she is.
Or wait, I'm actually not sure.
She's getting paid.
Doesn't matter.
She's getting. Anywho, the last thing to discuss on today's show that we haven't gotten to yet is a moment of bliss that leads into a singles match that we kind of teased earlier. The moment of bliss special guest is EC3. EC3 gets his full entrance for the first time on Monday Night Raw. Alexa asks him a couple of questions, but there are no responses, as has been tradition for EC3. That being said, though, they're kind of teasing some tension between Alexa and EC3 here, and this is a pairing that I'm actually down for. I think that this could help both of them.
Wrong word, buddy.
I'm going to mute his microphone before we're done tonight. What's going to end up happening? Anyway, I think that the pairing of these two on screen could work for both of them. Having each other to bounce off of with their storylines and with their backstage segments and stuff, much the same way that Alexa did with Braun Strowman back when they were doing the Mixed Match Challenge thing. First, they are interrupted by Nia Jax, because Nia Jax interrupts and ruins everything anymore. Then they're interrupted by Dean Ambrose, who first shuts down Nia with the quickness, which was hilarious to me, just because, well, fuck Nia, just general principle. And then tries to have an interview with EC3, asking where EC1 and 2 are, which popped both me and Andrew a little bit more than we both. EC3 proceeds to punch Ambrose in the face, walks down to the ring as we go to a commercial break, and what you know, the match is made during the commercial with EC3 versus Dean Ambrose, and EC3 picks up the victory with the Steamboat Press at 2 minutes and 27 seconds. really, that felt a little bit longer than 2.5 minutes. Anyway, we see that EC3 picking up his first pinfall victory on Monday Night Raw here in a nothing match against Ambrose. With Ambrose on his way out the door, DeMarco, where do you think this leaves EC3 and Ambrose here? Do you think they're going to turn Ambrose babyface for one last quick run on as a good guy before he leaves, as a sign of good faith in the hope to get him to come back? Andrew, I'll ask you first. Where do you think Ambrose goes from here with the rest of his run, and how do you think they did with EC3 here with the pairing with Alexa?
Well, to start, yes, Stormy Daniels and Ja Rule are both in Wrong Side of Town, along with Batista and RVD.
Fuck.
And it's still an awful fucking movie. Like, you need to go out of your way to see this just to see how bad it is. Like, that's the level of bad this movie
is. Shit.
I'm not arguing that point. I'm just throwing that name people know.
I am by no means a 50 Cent fan, but what he did to Ja Rule's concert was fucking hilarious.
It was. I agree with you. But now, when it comes to this whole EC3, you know, not knowing how to talk, and Alexa always getting interrupted and becomes a gimmick now, it's just painful. It's really just hard to sit through. And honestly, Nia Jax missed the perfect opportunity to make a reference when she basically sort of said it, but didn't say it correctly. She's like, you can't interrupt my interrupt. She should have said, are you interrupting my interrupting? That's funnier. It's better. And there's a reference there. So that would have been a better sentence. That's nitpicking though. Dean was actually kind of funny in his little back and forth tete-a-tete with EC3, who doesn't know how to speak, and he wasn't really giving him a chance to. So
I was going to say, you have a tete-a-tete with somebody who doesn't speak?
Well, when you're just assuming they're answering, it's still a tete-a-tete because there's still a two-way to a degree. And, you know,
Tony,
it's all in your mind.
You're the
it's
writer,
all how you want to do it.
Tiebreaker.
What? You broke your tie? What?
Continue, Andrew.
Can you have a tete-a-tete when you're just kind of inferring what the person's response is and just kind of peppering them with questions?
No. A tete-a-tete is a direct response and a call and response. It's a conversation.
And hitting somebody's not a call or response?
Continue.
Hitting someone's not a call or response?
No, not a call to response, a call and response.
And hitting somebody is not a response? You never said it had to be verbal.
He's reaching to try to get out of taking that L. Continue, Andrew.
No, I'm just saying, it just back and forth, it was still fun, and then we knew where it was going to go, and the match was awful.
Some would call our podcast a triple tet.
You know, one would.
I'm just saying,
no.
I'm pro tet.
Anyway, the match was terrible. The crowd was dead. No one cared. He got the pin. The crowd was... It was shit. What do you expect me to say? I was trying to just do something and rip off of the fucking Moment of Bliss, because that match was, awful. Like, there was nothing there. The match started. The crowd made no noise. Dean kind of got an advantage. The crowd made a little bit of noise. They had EC3 down in a fucking position where they were supposed to cheer him up. The crowd chanted Ambrose. Nobody gave a fuck about EC3. And then he won, and the crowd still did nothing. They even panned to the crowd because he sat on the fucking barrier, or whatever you want to call it. And, three people looked like they were happy because they were in the shot. The rest of the crowd stood up, and they just kind of stood there. Nobody cared. What? This is why you call people up, for literally fucking no reason. And if Ambrose is on the way out, this still doesn't help. I don't know how a win with no reaction is actually going to look good on TV. Unless post-production, they put in some response. That might help.
Yeah, when we come back next week and we see a highlight of this, the sound will be peppered. Don't worry. Tony, what did you think?
That's the only thing they got.
I think that Derek Bateman has really just changed his entire image, and I'm happy for him. But other than that, there's really not a lot of growth there. No, realistically, I agree that Dean Ambrose was hilarious. He's not supposed to be hilarious right now. What are you doing being funny, sir? What are you doing? Also, it just, EC3 is a person who no one knows about, no one cares about. NXT is to be treated as not WWE, okay? Even though they very much are, and we're aware of that, the casual fan really doesn't know who this guy is. And he didn't even get a chance to talk. And no, hitting Dean Ambrose isn't really talking. It's making a statement. But the reality is Dean Ambrose is not supposed to be liked, right? Because he's a bad guy, because he, you know, hates Seth and blah, blah, blah. So it just becomes...
But there are no heels and faces anymore, Tony.
Well, it's not even heels and face. It's character consistency. It's the reality that, like, you know, Dean Ambrose has been a shithead since he gained a siren in his music. So him smacking the mic out of EC3's hand, that makes sense. Like, who the fuck are you, right? Even what he said was funny. It's just a matter of what, if you're doing that with EC3, how are we supposed to feel about this guy? Because we know Dean. We know this guy. And if you're making us laugh, then okay, we got you. I'm going to back you because I don't know this shithead. And he's being sold as a, you know, well-endowed monetarily. And Alexa Bliss, the super hot chick who I've been pining over for months, is crushing on him. So I'm definitely not going to like this guy, you know. And then he beats Dean Ambrose, and you're just kind of confused. Like, what am I supposed to do with this here? Let's talk about Nia, because I love doing that. Shut the fuck up. Okay, this little blind date here. You know what a blind date is, guys? It's when you don't see the person before the fucking date. I know it's small. I know it's minuscule. But it's just every single week she says something that makes no sense. It just doesn't. It comes out super, super cheesy. It's really bad delivery. It's really bad writing. And she's just really bad. The only saving grace was that she didn't wrestle tonight, so she didn't kill anyone.
You know what? That's going to be a thing going forward. The Nia Jax is shit moment of the week. Fuck it.
We could. Yeah. We'll probably have one every week.
And that's a problem. Continue, Tony. Sorry.
No. Nia sucks. That's it. I mean, the whole interrupting. Alexa Bliss did great. I mean, character was on point. The girl, even her laughter when Dean Ambrose made fun of EC3, her flirtatious ways, like, Alexa Bliss is a fully formed character. And she's, like, going to roll her eyes when people, you know, interrupt her. She's going to throw her hands up in the air, like, what the fuck? What the fuck? Another person? So, like, she's really the only one holding this all together. Nia is just, like, the complete opposite of that. You're inconsistent. You're annoying. People aren't tweeting about you because they want to talk about you. They're making fun of you. Not as a fat chick. Not as a woman. As a wrestler. You're just not entertaining. You're not good. And we as a collective unit, aren't booing you because you're doing the right things. We're booing you because, essentially, you're not getting any better at what you're doing. And I've said it before. You're hired for a job. You're basically required to perform that job well. If you don't perform that job well, you get fired. That's how the world works, you know? And you can look at countless people who have gotten fired and have, like, just completely obliterated their workouts and changed their ethics and became a full-fledged wrestler and came back and proven themselves. And you want proof of that, you look no further than the same person in this segment, EC3, who was once Derek Bateman. And he's now this, you know, good-looking, relatively well, you know, a good wrestler. There was growth there. Drew McIntyre, growth. Nia Jax, you've been here for a minute. I have seen, in fact, I've seen a regression. I have seen her get more and more bad. Like, I feel like there's a laziness, there's a complacency, there's this idea that you're untouchable, and no one in the WWE is untouchable, and no one should ever feel this way. This is all assumption. None of it is, you know, real. It's all conjecture. But it just seems that way, you know? Like, where is your attempt to be a better wrestler?
Nia is so bad, she makes Tony forget how to English. I don't think I've ever heard you as flummoxed as you are when you're trying to come up with new and creative ways to describe the ineptitude of Nia.
Hijack sucks.
Yeah, the thing about it is she mentioned that people stay tweeting, stay talking, stay typing about her. Yeah, because you have X-Pac heat, bitch. We want you to go the fuck away. It's not we're interested in seeing you get your ass kicked. It's we want you off of our goddamn screens. I know I'm usually the calm one around here, but no, she needs to go. Not today, not tomorrow, like right fucking now. She needs to go. Because everything she touches turns to shit. I rarely advocate for people to get fired, but she needs to go. Andrew, anything else to
maybe
add?
Maybe we should send her Yokozuna tapes.
Because Yokozuna was actually talented. That's mean to Yokozuna.
Is it wrong that the first thought that I had was she would eat them? I'm a miserable sumbitch sometimes. I'll be the first person to admit it. All right. That's an official wrap on tonight's episode of Raw. There was also a Mojo Rawley promo backstage where he's once again yelling at a mirror like he's some kind of multi-dimension Spider-Man. But that's neither here nor there. We'll see where Mojo goes, if anywhere. I'm personally willing to give Mojo a chance just because he impressed me in the short run that he had with the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal win before Zack Ryder came back from his injury. But I don't know if he's ever going to be able to recapture any portion of that success that he had back then. You guys have anything for Mojo here, or are we going to go into the final reaction?
Man, Katrina was hot in NXT. I ignored everyone because of AJ. Look at her.
Maxine?
How are you, Tony?
Oksana, ugh.
You mean Maxine, right, Tony?
Yeah, I remember Maxine. Yeah, that's who I was talking about.
I thought that was her NXT name. Katrina from Lucha Underground, but Maxine in NXT. All right. Yeah, his focus was elsewhere. But anyway, that officially wraps up tonight's episode of Raw. Let's get into the final reaction here. Tony, favorite match or moment?
Shit, man. Raw was boring. Even Sasha was asleep. Can't say that I have a favorite match. Let's
Sasha
just say Becky because she's Becky. No, she doesn't get the AJ treatment. Only AJ could pull off sleeping. Oh, I miss her so much.
I already played the sound effect. You're not getting it a second time. Andrew, favorite match or moment?
I'm going to give it to Elias and Jarrett. Becky was close because those were like the only two good moments of the entire show. But I think Elias and Jarrett was a little better.
I was going to go with Elias and Jarrett as well. I guess I'll go with Balor and the Leo Rush then, because I actually enjoyed the match more than that. I personally think Leo's capable of much more inside the ring, and I really hope he gets a chance to stand as the main roster competitor, because despite the size disparity that he may be facing with most of the people, there is a natural charisma to him that I think would connect to the audience if he were away from such a deep vacuum as Bobby Lashley. Greg Watcher, Tony.
Man. You know, oh, God, like, everything, just like, the entire show just went through my head. Road Dogg, Nia Jax, Leo Rush talking, Bobby Lashley talking. Oh, my God, did we not talk about that? Just when you think, why does Leo Rush exist, Lashley gets handed the mic. What the fuck? Bro, chill. Jesus. Yeah, I'm gonna roll with Nia. She just annoys me. Her presence is not a present. It is a fucking vacuum of charisma.
Andrew?
So many things to pick from. Let's go with Apollo Crews. Yeah, that aforementioned talk with Kurt and nothing happening. Yeah, I'm gonna go with that.
I got your back.
Well, I didn't mean tonight. Just down the road.
That's a lot of points.
Oh, my bad.
I have plans. I'm sorry. I gotta go pick up my kids from school. It's 10 o'clock at night. It's night school. They're 35.
Speaking of night school, did either of you guys see that? I actually was kind of interested. I wanted to know what you guys thought.
Wait, what did you say?
Speaking of night school, did either of you guys see that with Kevin Hart and Tiffany Haddish? I think that's how her last name is pronounced.
No.
Oh, yeah, that is who you're talking about. You said the name right, but no, I did not see that.
Okay, I kind of want to see it, so I might end up seeing it. If I end up renting it, I'll let you guys know what I think. I'm going to go with whosever decision it was to let EC3 make his in-ring debut tonight and then give him 2.5 fucking minutes.
I bet he'd rather have 2.5 fucking minutes with Alexa.
Amen to that, sir. We all would, except for you.
Aw, Puddin.
Scale of 1 to 10, Tony.
Oh, AJ's a fucking 11 for sure.
How about for tonight's episode?
You're just giving him layups tonight, aren't you?
That's usually how this show goes. I set him up, he knocks him down.
Yeah, this was an easy 4 out of 10. I mean, it wasn't an angry one, you know? It's not like, fuck Raw, Raw sucks. It's just like, what happened, guys? One of your writers sick? Did you lose a page of the script and have to start from scratch? What happened? I don't know.
Andrew?
Yeah, I was going to go 4.5 out of 10 because it was boring and it was just slightly below average to me.
I liked Balor and Rush more than you guys did. I enjoyed Jared and Elias more so from personal bias here just because I might be one of the biggest Jeff Jarrett marks in the entire world, so I'm going to go with a 5. I actually thought that some of what we got was pretty palatable. There was some stuff that definitely stood out as could have done better. Anything related to Nia Jax could have been done better. The Ambrose EC3 segment pissed me off just because of the fact that they only gave me 2.5 minutes. And while Becky Lynch not wanting to go back into Dr. Jill makes sense from a character perspective, seeing her go after Stephanie with no kind of actual provocation, it seemed out of character. I'm on Tony's side of that conversation from earlier in the show. I didn't care for it from the character. I understand the Dr. Jill point that you brought up, Andrew, and I get that, but I'm more with Tony that in regards to the fact that her attack with Stephanie doesn't seem like something that Becky's character would have done. I'm going to go with a 5 here. Who's your MVP tonight, Tony?
Man, this is hard. Apple AirPods. Because apparently they are loud enough to block out a loud screaming blonde.
I'd like to hear Dana Skirt. Never mind. Maybe more. Andrew?
I got nothing with you sometimes. But no, Becky gets the MVP for me. Because, yeah.
Shucky, ducky, quack, quack.
The whole promo and Stephanie attack hit me differently than it did both of you. So I think Becky was the high point of the show.
Well, I'm going to watch it again and actually visually see it.
I'm going to go with Alexa Bliss for her role, her character development during the moment of Bliss that we discussed here. Tony's completely correct. That is a fully fleshed character. She knows who she is. She knows how she wants to portray herself. And she does so fantastically. And that's going to officially wrap us up here for the Raw Reaction. Tony, in addition to listening to your thoughts on Raw here on the Raw Reaction, where can people read your thoughts on Monday Night Raw?
Pornhub, page 57. After all that weird incest porn. Yeah, there's a lot of comments on there. 411media.com. I am now officially doing the Raw report and the SmackDown report, at least for the foreseeable future. It appears that I've got, you know, a leg up on Larry, our loved colleague and boss. So I'll be doing that until I get notification that I don't have to.
That's
well, it wouldn't be Tony if he didn't get that little line in there. So, proud of you, Tony.
Thanks.
Our once again, our continued well wishes to Larry Zonka. We hope that he's able to return to the Miami Dolphins one of these days.
At least they're still the only undefeated team, baby. Bust open the bubbly.
Absolutely. Andrew, where can people read your stuff at?
The internet?
Plug the website, you schmuck.
But Tony already talked about Pornhub. I don't like RedTube or XHamster that much, so I prefer Pornhub. What can I say? But, yes, the same place you'll find this wonderful podcast and other ones, with at least adequate, maybe slightly below, maybe slightly above content. This one's at least right there pushing for high middle, something like that content. thechairshot.com and Chairshot Radio Network. You can find all bunch of stuff to read, to listen to, just fun stuff in general. And Harry's been adding his opinions to things little by little, but you know, it's getting there. Where else can people find you aside from Chairshot, Harry?
Chapter 2 of Progress just recently went up. Chapter 3's in the queue. Chapter 4 just got finished and will be uploaded to the database soon to be posted as well. Andrew and I have been kind of discussing a game plan going forward for some of my alternative company reviews, Impact Wrestling, which I've covered on the website before, AEW, which has its big Double or Nothing show in May. The current plan for those, and I will officially break the news for that here on the show, is that in April, right before the next Impact Wrestling show, the next Impact Wrestling pay-per-view, I will be covering their homecoming pay-per-view from January. And right before Double or Nothing on May 25th, I will go back and take a look at All In, which you can actually read Andrew's review of already on thechairshot.com.
Which is why I'm interested in what you're going to say, Harry, because my take on All In was a little lukewarm because I didn't buy into the hype quite as much as other people. So, curious where you stand on it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting because I think this will be the first time we've covered the same show. Yours is already up, and then this will be me talking about it. I don't believe that's happened yet with what I've posted on the website this far, so we'll see what happens. In addition, make sure you guys check out everybody else there. A fond farewell to Eric Ames, and a thank you for all of his contributions to the Chair Shot as well. But for the third man, Andrew Balas, and the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero, I'm Harry Broadhurst, and this has been the Raw Reaction here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. Tony, send us home.
Deuces, bitches.
Aw, Puddin'.
He hung up right as I hit that, and now I hit the exit music.
Is this the final scene in our tragic play? Only curtains remain to I'm still broken. play. Only curtains remain to fall. There's no reason left to stay in this place. We move backwards against the wall. Conversation's over.
You have been listening to The Raw Reaction here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. Join us again next Monday night at 11:30 p.m. Eastern as Harry Broadhurst, Tony Acero, and Andrew Blaz bring you The Raw Reaction, a presentation of the Chair Shot Radio Network online at thechairshot.com. Hey guys, Harry here once again. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next Monday. The Go Home Show means it's time for predictions. Myself and Tony are 7-2, Andrew 6-3. How will those change? Tune in next week and you'll get to hear our predictions for the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view on the 17th. We'll talk to you guys next Monday night here on the Chair Shot Radio Network.